Yeah, happy Labor Day, everybody. I hope you're getting a chance to enjoy some time away from work while Davis and I slave away here in the studio. I'm kidding. Welcome to a special pre-recorded edition of AgriTalk. Glad that you've joined us. Happy Labor Day. We'll make it feel as live as we can.
Not live from Labor Day in the USA via Farm Journal broadcast. This is AgriTalk. This morning we'll begin with Shay Folk from AgView Solutions. Then it's on to Greg Peterson, that's Machinery Pete. And we'll wrap it up with Alan Morgan from the National Rural Health Association. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
Hey, thank you so much, Davis. Yeah, happy Labor Day, buddy. How you doing?
Happy Labor Day to you as well. I'm doing fantastic, or so I would assume.
Yes, let's make some assumptions
too soon to tell.
Here. Yes. Oh, but we've got a great show for you. The conversation that we have with Shay Folk, you guys, pay attention. Pay attention to this. He's got some great tips going into the harvest season that I think everybody needs to hear. We've got the conversation with Alan Morgan from Rural Health Association. Boy, he's got a level of concern, again, that everybody needs to hear and everybody needs to understand, Davis. It's very important stuff.
That really is. Yep.
Yeah. And of course, we'll get the latest that is coming in from the used machinery market. Greg Peterson standing by, ready to go. As a matter of fact, you might say that Peterson's already in the can and ready to roll when we come back in the next segment. So,
boy, you are really lifting the veil on this radio thing, aren't you?
Oh, it's so much fun. So much fun. Hey, Farm Journal Field Days wrapped up a bit over a week ago, and the last thing that we did was that hashtag Farm On concert with Lee Bryce and my buddy Justin Moore. It was tough to take it all in. There was so much there. There's so much information.
So much.
But we've got some good news for you. We're making all of these sessions available at, get ready for this, it's a little bit different, agweb.com/fielddaysondemand. agweb.com/fielddaysondemand. So right now, what I want to do is give you a taste of what's in there. Here's the host of the Ohio event, Glenn Newcomer, talking to family business consultant Amy Wirtz about working in a three-generation farm, working with both his dad and his son.
My father always told me that the most difficult thing for him to do was to allow me to make mistakes. I think we all have enough experience under our belt that it's very difficult to hold your tongue when you see the younger generation making a mistake that you had already addressed when you were younger, and it's like you don't want to have to reinvent the wheel. It's like, I've been there, I've done that. Even though I hate that cliche, as I get older, it resonates with me a little bit more, because if I had to learn the hard way, I learned more from my mistakes than from my successes.
Can you stop there a minute?
Sure.
Can you say that again?
What did I say?
So what Glenn just said is, and this is really important for the owning generations, I learned more from my mistakes than I did from my successes.
Yes, that's very true. And I've made a lot of mistakes. Hindsight's 20/20. We can all go back and say what we could have, should have, would have done differently when we were young. And it's very difficult as an older generation to look at the younger generation and not steer them in the right direction. And some things you just realize, they have to figure it out for themselves. And sometimes those lessons can be costly, but at the same time, you have to allow them to discover the problems associated with a bad decision in order to appreciate the decisions of a good decision, the results of a good decision.
You also mentioned, Glenn, in our prep for this, that when you and Ann were discussing this, it was a little bit about, like, you were go, 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 and you were the accelerator, and Dad was kind of the brake. We talked about pacing a little bit.
Yeah, that's actually the analogy that we used. I was the throttle, and he was the brake. And somehow we moved forward. And I guess there's a proportion there of the amount of time you use the accelerator and the amount of time you use the brake. My dad was the brake, in a sense, in that he held me back, maybe too much, but because of the concern. When we started farming, we were in the 80s. And every decision that we made was a difficult decision because of the finances that that was just current or was going on during the 80s. And so I was, even though I was young and naive, I still had that fire, that desire to grow and do things. And yet my father still had the wisdom, and we also understood the reality of where the finances were in the 80s. So part of my philosophy today still is a result of what I experienced as through the 80s. And my dad told me that he would allow me to make choices, but he was my backup in case I failed. And I never wanted to fail.
So I see it a lot in my work. A lot of what I do with clients is manage the eagerness of the incoming generation and the change in risk profile of the older generation. Younger generation typically wants to build and grow, and the older generation wants to preserve their wealth. And that is what we call pacing between generations. And it is constant. It's no different than when you're driving your tractor or your car. You have to find the right speed to make it work and function well. And that is constant in this work. And if you think you're going to get that pace and it's going to stay steady, you are kidding yourself. So you always have to be having conversations between the owning generation and the next generation about that issue. Are we growing fast enough, or are we growing too slow? Because honestly, that's where I see the most conflict in transferring management and ownership between farmers.
Yeah, great conversation there between Amy Wirtz and Glenn Newcomer. The thing to remember here, guys, you can't avoid all conflict, but conflict can be managed, okay?
That's good.
It can be managed. Yeah. So you got to put the prep work in. You got to handle some of those touchy situations when they come up. All right. Again, you can see all of the Field Days sessions at agweb.com/fielddays on demand. And so, I got to mention this.
Hold on.
Congratulations to Jamie Taylor of Michigan. She won the UTV giveaway at Farm Journal Field Days. Jamie Taylor. Yeah. Okay.
Outstanding. Congratulations, Jamie Taylor. Yeah.
Right. Right. Wow. Okay. You can join us for these Best of Farm Journal Field Days. They're brought to you by Channel and the new hashtag Growing Ahead initiative sponsored by Bayer. Follow at Channel Seed on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook to see how local teams have gone virtual to keep delivering solid agronomic advice. So, yeah, there's lots of great information out there.
And you're telling me if I demand more, I
on demand
to see demand. What went on there at Farm Journal Field Days. I can get that for free?
Yes. Yes.
I can just demand that. Really?
It's free. It's
the internet
free.
Is and a wonderful thing, isn't
it's
it?
It's almost live. It feels like it's almost live. It really
That's
does.
Weird. Yeah.
I know.
How do they do that?
Crazy. I don't know. It's the magic of you know, stuff. And radio.
It's something.
I love it.
Nobody knows how it really works.
Exactly. Agweb.com/fielddays on demand. Okay, you guys, stay with us. Coming up next, we're going to have a safety conversation with safety consultant Shay Folk from AgView Solutions. That's coming up next, right here on a Labor Day edition of AgriTalk.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize USDA's Natural Resource Conservation Service for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
And welcome back on this Labor Day 2020 to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today, and hope that you're enjoying the day. Hope you can find a way to relax a little bit, and of course, be safe while you're doing it. Let's have a conversation with Shay Folk. He is the safety consultant with AgView Solutions, joins us right now. Shay, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Doing really well. Had an awesome weekend here. Is able to enjoy some beautiful weather and really optimistic for the fall that we have in front of us.
Yeah, and part of that optimism, Shay, when we talk about the emotional cycle of a farmer and a farm. You got the spring of the year when everybody gets all excited about the start of a new season, and then you've got the fall of the year when you're reaping when you're harvesting the rewards of another year's worth of work. So we're on emotional highs. Normally, I should say, we're on emotional highs. We need to have those times, but we need to be safe in those very, very busy times of the year.
Absolutely. And I think on top of reaping the harvest and the hard work that we've had, you know, we had a full season here that we've made it through, being safe, getting the crop in, caring for it throughout the year. And as we move into fall, there's just so many moving pieces going on that sometimes safety can take a back burner. And I would advocate for the opposite of that we truly need to focus on safety as we move into the season. And, you know, there's a few key things to look at. One of the biggest things that I think right now is taking a look again at kids on the farming operation. And as you well know, it looks very different from state to state. But ultimately, there are going to be a lot more kids around the farm again this fall. And I think one of the key things that we need to be aware of as we move into that is, how do we train them and ensure that they are being safe? One thing that we talked about last time we spoke here is you have operators that are young, maybe 10, 12, 14 years old, running grain carts and things like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but how do we effectively train them as we move into fall?
Right. And part of that training is finding the right way to communicate with someone that might be, you know, if it's your kid, Shay, they might be looking at you like, I already know this. Come on. You don't need to tell me this, but you need to explain the safety procedures for everything that they're doing, just as a reminder.
No doubt. And I would say too, that, fortunately, whether it's parents or not, kids are often extremely receptive to the training that they're receiving. And sometimes, as we see, whether it's on the consulting side of the industry or within families and parents, hearing that information come from someone else maybe means more than coming from mom or dad or grandma or grandpa. So
sure.
If you're someone that's experienced in the operation, that's maybe a skilled grain cart operator or someone that has run the grain system, maybe having that person reach out and explain some of that safety stuff will hit home a little bit better than coming from mom or dad.
Yeah. And don't just say, this is how we do it. This is how we do it and why we do it this way. Explain that to them, correct?
Absolutely. The why is most important. And that's for
yeah.
anybody that's learning a new task or skill, is if they understand why, they're going to be much better off moving through that. So, you know, ultimately just making sure that the kids on the farm understand and have training on what they're going to be working through. And then understanding the communication and signaling that goes across with yeah. that, because I would much rather have someone over communicate a point and keep everyone safe than have to worry about whether someone understands what they should be doing.
Right. Shay, you kind of mentioned this a little bit before, but let's talk more about it. Time management. Most of the time when an accident happens, it's because we're hurrying through something. We can be quick without hurrying and getting things done if you manage your time correctly.
Absolutely. That time management's key. And I think even
yeah.
more importantly, so for so many out there that have been devastated by either the drought or the derecho that came through, patience is going to be key this fall. And patience is timing as part of it. Patience is working with each other and having that good communication and not necessarily emotional communication, and just understanding that there's a lot of new moving factors, right? So there might be new equipment out there on the reels or the grain
sure.
heads or bagging equipment. So making sure that we understand that patience and time management is going to be key to a successful harvest. And this also goes back on the time side to sleep and rest and recuperation. So as we look today at Labor Day weekend, if you're able to take some time off and really recharge before you jump into the season, keep that mindset as you go through the season as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked with Ted Matthews here a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about mental health and doing your mental health checkups. And he brought up, watch your diet, watch your food, make sure that you're not just filling your face with fast food. Make sure it's good, nutritious. Maybe have a bag of carrots in the cab with you or something like that.
Yes, we've done a few podcasts on that on our podcast, The Egg Usage, yeah. Just looking at, you know, what are some of these factors that lead to a healthy and successful harvest, and on the mental health side as well, it's so crucial. And I think number one, it starts with sleep. Shortly after that, it's getting a good workout in, getting some good exercise in, and eating right. It all feeds into it. And then on top of that, if you can build on those stepping stones and then move into the operational side of things, I think it really sets people up for success. And one other note I'd like to make on that, from the safety and health standpoint, so the AgriSafe Network actually has a whole week in September dedicated to farm safety and health. So that's September 21st through the 25th. The AgriSafe Network will be hosting a series of webinars. There's 8 or 10 different topics where really some of the best people in the industry are going to be in talking about different safety and health topics. So I would encourage anybody that's out there listening, if you are able to check out the webinars, that'd be great. But also, we will be putting those into podcast format through the AgriSafe Network podcast, to where that'll be a great combine or tractor cab listen as we move into that third and fourth week of September there. So I would encourage, as a follow-up to this, for people to go listen to that.
Yeah, good stuff. As a reminder, we're talking with Shay Folk. He is a safety consultant with AgView Solutions. Talk more about the AgriSafe podcast. Exactly what is it?
Right. So the AgriSafe Network podcast is for the AgriSafe network itself. And ultimately what their goal is to provide safety and health information in a way that is more effective for farmers. So they actually handle topics as they come up. For instance, Hurricane Laura, you know, swept through the Gulf Coast and up through Louisiana and Arkansas there. They completely changed the focus that they had for their week on how do we provide the best information to farmers, ranchers, and agribusinesses in that area. So looking at water quality issues, how do we have emergency preparedness for farm operations? And they're very flexible and reactive to the things that we have going on across the country. Cool. And truly a great resource. They act as the conduit between health and safety professionals and the needs that farmers and agribusinesses have in order to provide quality solutions and information.
Very cool. Very cool, Shay. We've got about maybe a couple of minutes left here, and I want to talk about some of the obvious things. Shields, be careful around the augers. You were touching on it with the new equipment, but it's easy. You know, if you've been working with the same auger tractor for the last 20 years, it's easy to get too comfortable around that equipment.
Unfortunately, complacency kills, and we see that every year. And we don't want anybody out there to suffer from unnecessary injury and even more importantly, loss of life. And there's a whole lot going on in the world right now, a whole lot of craziness. One of the final points I want to make on top of the guards and safety machinery is maybe the less obvious, and that's looking at respiratory health. So obviously that's been a huge topic in the industry right now because of the coronavirus and everything that's going on. But even more importantly, as we look at masks and respirators, what's the availability for your farm operation? Have you given that a thought moving into cleaning out grain bins and handling the products that you have going through there? And even more importantly, bigger picture, looking at the average age of a farmer out there, and this is not to make anybody think about their age necessarily in depth, but just to think about the fact that you are potentially more likely to suffer from respiratory illnesses, and whether that's coronavirus or just from having the fumes from engines and also the dust that's with moving grain, big consideration as we move into fall. And ultimately, you know, we just want to make sure that everybody's staying safe out there. And
excellent.
Thinking of these things.
Excellent. Shay, good reminders, good pointers on a lot of things. Work on those communication skills with the young ones, and let's all go out and have a safe harvest. Thanks, Shay.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, that's Shea Folk, safety consultant for AgView Solutions. We'll be back with more AgriTalk in a moment.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Good morning, AgriTalk listeners. This is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady with your Markets Now update. Markets are closed today for Labor Day. When grain traders return from the extended weekend, focus will be on preparations for USDA September crop reports on Friday. USDA is widely expected to lower its corn and soybean crop estimates from August to reflect the late season drought and the August 10th derecho windstorm. USDA resurveyed corn and soybean harvested acres in Iowa because of the severe nature of the windstorm. Smaller crop estimates typically lead to reductions in demand, but with China aggressively buying U.S. corn and soybeans, USDA's changes to the demand side of the new crop balance sheets will be closely scrutinized. Traders' reaction to USDA September crop reports will set price trends for the grain and soy markets into fall as harvest is getting started early this year. Traders' focus in the livestock markets is typically on meat demand coming out of the Labor Day weekend, which unofficially marks the end of the summer grilling season. Demand will be especially important this year as markets are still dealing with backlog marketings from the pandemic. September isn't typically a strong month for beef demand, and exports have been slowed by the pandemic. But beef demand is doing a decent job keeping pace with hefty supplies. Recent action in wholesale pork trade suggests retailers are buying supplies for October pork features for National Pork Month. Pork export demand is also strong, driven by robust Chinese purchases of U.S. pork as it tries to cover domestic shortfalls in production due to its African swine fever outbreak. For Markets Now, this is ProFarmer editor Brian Grady wishing you an enjoyable and safe Labor Day.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
And welcome back to AgriTalk on this Labor Day 2020. Glad that you can join us today. I'm your host, Chip Flory. It's Monday. That means it's time for a conversation with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, I'm doing well, Chip. Happy Labor Day to you and the crew.
Yeah. Hey, it was good getting to see you last week. We didn't get to spend a whole lot of time sitting down and having a conversation or even drinking a cold one, but it was still good to see you out on the road. It was fun.
Yeah, Farm Journal Field Days. It was big fun being in Jessup, Iowa, and then Bryan, Ohio. Started something big there with Farm Journal Field Days. That was great.
Yeah, no doubt. And it just kind of felt good to be out and amongst people again. And people were very respectful. Yeah. You know, it's everybody knows what's going on, so it was taken seriously. There's no question about that. But it was just so good to be sitting in a shop with a bunch of people again.
Yeah, you could sit down and spread out and just, hey, how you doing? And talk about many things. And you're right, it did feel great.
So what if I stick my head in the Machinery Pete Pavilion at FarmJournalFieldDays.com? What should I expect to see?
Oh, you're going to see some good stuff in there, folks. Poke your head in there because we've got all kinds of equipment demos, new products. It was really fun for me to get a look at all these things and worked with the companies, and they were able to send us some fantastic field videos on their end. I'm so excited to bring those to you. And then also just different kinds of content. I mean, we posted a video in there. I did a little video. It was fun. I just mapped out the top 10 tractors I've seen sold at auction in the last 30 mm-hmm. years. So if you ever got a few moments, hop in there, folks. That's a fun conversation. And then also did a video I can't remember the title of the video, but if you click on it, it'll say like Machinery Pete Market Trends. But what it really is, there are 9 things I've learned over the past 30 years tracking the market and talking to people and dealing with these prices. And I think hopefully some of these rules, I call them machine repeat rules, but you can apply them forward to help you save money when buying, selling, trading down the road. So yeah, it was really fun to do those.
Very cool. Okay. Let's get to it. What you got for the pick of the week?
Pick of the week, I got a pair of grinder mixers. Of course, this segment we've talked a lot about, Chip. Very hot. Of course, not many manufacturers make them anymore. But I saw two in the last week that were just red hot. First off, we got a 2019 Artsway 7165. Sell for $40,750. That was August 27th. Our friends at Zomer Auction over there in Northwest Iowa had that. That's actually the second highest auction price I've ever seen on a grinder mixer. Only sure. higher one was a similar model, an Artsway 7165 that BigIron.com sold November 20th of 19. That one also came out of Iowa, interestingly, out of Colfax, Iowa. That was an 18 model for $42,750. So that's on the newer side. Now, yep. on the other end of the spectrum, the older condition, nice grinder mixers, I tell you, yeah. we saw a John Deere 700 that sold September 1st, friends at Sullivan Auctioneers, at an online farm auction in Viola, Illinois. And they had a John Deere 700, went for $7,500. That's the highest I've seen in over 20 years. So good condition, used grinder mixers are kind of like gold out there.
No doubt about that. You know what? The $40,750 on the 2019 Artsway doesn't surprise me as much as the $7,500 yeah. on that John Deere 700. That's pretty impressive.
That Viola, Illinois sale, that was nice stuff. They had a couple other strong ones there. They had a New Holland 570 baler go for $9,750, a New Holland H7230 10-foot disc bind, a scraping $17,000.
Really?
So when you have quality used stuff in that hay sector, small hay stuff, like we talked about all summer, really,
yeah.
You know, and that grinder mixer, just exceptionally strong, bidding.
That's
and it's
cool.
not done in a vacuum again. Not just one guy wanted it. There were a bunch of people that wanted one of those
right.
items.
Right. Exactly. Okay. I know that this last week was a big week for combines, kind of a test for the market. What did you learn?
Yeah, it really was a market-setting week, Chip. I mean, if you zero it down just August 27th to September 2nd, right in there, we saw just shy of 100 combines sold at auction. You know, kind of par for the course, I would say. Good condition. We're kind of holding, not setting the world on fire by any means. But, for example, the two highest ones we saw, both were 19 models. One was an S770 that the Steffes Group sold August 28th on a farm auction in Slayton, Minnesota. The day after Farm Journal Field Days ended, we actually posted a YouTube video of this one. That one only had 90 engine hours and brought 285, so not too bad of a buy there. And then the day before, August 27th, on the big Sullivan Auctioneers dealer farmer online auction, a 2019 model S780 from up in the area where I grew up, western Minnesota, Elbow Lake, Minnesota. That S780 had just, I think, 859 engine hours and went for 268. So those were the two highest the last week. But again, okay. what you can do, folks, just go to machinerepeat.com, click on auction price data, and we got search filters. So you can do just what I just explained. Click on combines, filter down to the last week, filter by highest price, most recent, whatever. I mean, you can really see what's happening in the market by just playing with these filters. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. You know, those two that you featured there, those were strong prices, but they're not record setting, are they?
No, not records. Again, you know, used combine market, there are some good buys out there. And I, at Farm Journal Field Days, some guy came up and he said, "Hey, Pete, I'm hoping to buy a combine. How's it looking?" And I said, "Well, you know, ironically, as you drift closer to harvest, your chances might improve." So we've seen it over the years, and, you know, it's there. Maybe a few better buys out there now.
Okay. So much of this is the online auction, and guys are getting, when I say guys, I'm talking about the auction mm-hmm. companies are getting better at presenting the equipment that is for sale in ways that it just, it's turning lights on for buyers out there, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. We had an example on the for sale by owner side recently, Chip. And we've talked about it a lot. It's been about 4 years I've sort of been, I don't want to say harping, but just advising people strongly, get drone video of your particularly planting and harvest on the farm. And then you can use that drone video when it comes time to sell. Now, a friend of both of ours from Denver, Iowa, Romain Schwier.
Oh, yeah.
Folks maybe remember, but recently he listed in machinerypete.com his beautiful 2007 John Deere 9760 SDS combine, 1,430 SEP hours. And he took my advice, and he had drone video. So we listed it. I did a Facebook post, Twitter, Instagram. Now, he Romain is smart. He priced it, you know, good price, not sky high, ridiculous. He priced it $79.5. And this baby was clean. Listed it Thursday night. By Saturday morning, he sold it to a buyer from St. James in Minnesota. And that buyer not only bought the combine, was so impressed with the quality of the machine, he actually bought a couple other items from Romain. So Romain texted me, and he's like, oh, my gosh, Pete, you know, thanks for getting the word out. But hats off to Romain for getting that drone video. So, folks, this fall, get video of your combine, your grain cart, your tractors in the field next spring planting. And then when it comes time to sell, if you want to sell private, let me know. We can help you move that baby fast.
Yeah. You know, and how smart is Romain to have a couple of other items that a buyer might be interested in?
Yep, exactly. And it's just like auctions, Chip. Sometimes when you go to that farm auction and it's so clean, it gives you confidence for the other items on the sale.
Yeah.
And like you say, Romain's stuff is so sharp that, and he did mention to me, he said, Pete, I've got a John Deere 9230 four-wheel drive coming with, I don't know, it's like 1,500 hours. So he'll be listing that soon. But again, hopefully we'll get a video. And again, when you buy quality stuff.
Well, yeah. And you know, you think about it on eBay, if you buy something, there's a button down at the bottom that lists or that says, look at other items from this seller.
Right. Exactly.
That makes all the sense in the world.
It does. It does. And same with auction companies that you trust. You know, the ones that will call out items with an issue. Well, this thing's got a leak on it. Well, thank you for telling me, because I didn't waste my day or my time now thinking this didn't have a leak.
Right.
Honesty is the best. And when you combine that with quality equipment, then, I mean, like I say, buyers buy with confidence.
Right. Right. Yeah. That is so true. So true. Okay. What do you got coming up this week?
Well, there's one really nice farm auction you got to get your eyes on, folks. It's Wednesday, September 9th. It's in Greenview, Illinois. One of my all-time favorite auctioneers, Ron Sainert, Sainert Auction Service. Fantastic guys there. They've got a sale with some really cool stuff on it. It's a retirement sale for Bob and Ruth Sampson. And hats off to Bob and Ruth. They've been farming for 60 years. So congratulations on their retirement.
Yes.
They got a 2011 Massey 7495, 880 hours. An 07 AGCO DT248, just over 1,000 hours. A Gleaner S67, low hours. Just beautiful stuff. So check that sale out again. It's Sainert Auction Service, folks. Should be some good bidding on that sale.
Well, yeah. And once again, here comes some low-hour equipment your way that this is the stuff that people have been looking for.
Right. And Ron, again, I've known Ron for about 30 years. He tipped me off months ago, and he said, Pete, this September 9th, this is nice stuff. So, again, you know, to see a Massey and an AGCO Gleaner combine, a couple of nice AGCO heads, and they got a 99 model International 4900 truck.
Yep.
Just under 170,000 miles on it. So,
cool.
Great stuff.
Good stuff, Greg. Thank you so much, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, sounds great, Chip.
All right, that is Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Coming up, we've got Alan Morgan from the National Rural Health Association right here on AgriTalk.
AgriTalk is brought to you by AGI, your on-farm partner. Visit aggrowth.com for more information.
The chickens have come home to roost. Find out whose fence they're perched on today on AgriTalk.
I'm a hard-working man.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk on this Labor Day. Glad that you could join us. Got Davis Michelson with me. Davis?
Yeah,
we're into
you know,
the
home
stretch, buddy, on Memorial or on Labor Day. Jeez, Memorial.
I'm sitting here. I've tried a new snack. It's dried seaweed snacks. I've seen them in the store before. And I went with the sesame seed flavor. They had sea salt flavor. And I thought, well, what's the point of that? You got seaweed flavored with sea salt.
Right.
Who are you helping with that? So I went with the sesame.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's all it. You know, imagine what you would think the bottom of a Chinese port would taste like, and that's what you get with the sesame seed here. Yeah, I can barely choke it down. I may never eat again, but it's supposed to be good for you.
We need to take care of my health. We need to get you back to potato chips and Oreos.
I think that sounds like a good idea. Maybe a Mountain Dew too, just for good measure.
All right. Hey, and speaking of a healthy diet like that,
yes,
let's bring in Alan Morgan. He's the CEO of the National Rural Health Association. Alan, I'm sure that you would not recommend that diet of potato chips and Oreos.
I'm just hopeful that this dry seaweed concept doesn't catch on.
I don't think there's any risk of that, sir. No risk at all.
Oh, let's hope not.
Oh, Alan, you've been very generous with your time this summer. We appreciate it so much. Love having you on to get an update on the situation. The first question is a very frank question. Are we keeping the doors open for the health providers in rural America?
Yeah, well, as of right now, the answer is yes. But as we hit into fall, I think a lot of us are really starting to worry about that.
Okay. What's driving that? What is making that a challenge? Is it just a simple fact that we don't have patients coming in for regular checkups, stuff like that?
Yes. Yeah, that and... let's be honest, it's unfortunate. A lot of small towns who have had some outbreaks of COVID, some of the residents just aren't comfortable yet going back for their regular checkups and outpatient elective procedures. They need to be comfortable with that, but that's putting a weight on these rural hospitals to keep their doors open. So there's a lot of things happening right now. I got to tell you, looking at this year, the beginning year this year when it first started and three of us had a chance to talk, at that point there was great concern. Rural hospitals were losing a lot of money. We had seen 12 of them close down just by April. Congress stepped in. They passed the CARES Act. And for the first time in 20 years, I was able to say rural hospitals nationwide are stable. It really stabilized them. But unfortunately, they burned through that cash. We still have COVID, and just in the last 2 weeks, we've seen three rural hospitals announce closure. I think there's room to be really concerned as we head into fall.
Okay. I would imagine that there is some hope that the next round of COVID-related aid for America is going to include some for rural health care.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Okay. There is talk. They've been talking about that. You know, right now, all the members of Congress are back in their districts. I hope people are seeing them. Hopefully, they're wearing masks, but hopefully, they're seeing them. They're going to come back into town next week, and first up on deck is another COVID relief legislation they're going to consider. That's got, as of right now, about $25 billion additional dollars in to help out health care. And again, you know, what should have happened is we should have seen COVID go away over the summer months. We all expected that. Right. But instead, for rural America, it was a summer of COVID. And these rural hospitals had to keep their beds available for the ones that were having, you know, an outbreak, and then they'd go away, then an outbreak. That really hurt their finances. And until we either have really good testing and tracing in small towns, or we're able to allow these rural hospitals to fully open up outpatient and elective procedures, unfortunately, we're going to have a good partnership with the federal government and these local hospitals.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Alan, 3 years ago, if we would have gotten word that there was $25 billion coming for rural health, we would have thought to ourselves, my gosh, what a blessing.
Problem solved, right?
Problem solved. But
problem solved. Yeah, but it is. And the problem is just these rural hospitals, they are the largest or second largest employer in rural counties, right behind the school system, right? They employ, you know, up to 125 individuals, and all those that revenue that comes into the small towns, it's not just about healthcare, it's about keeping rural communities afloat. Yeah. And so, yeah, you're talking big money for all the medical staff to keep them on site, keep the 24/7 emergency room service open. Yeah. It's big business. And when you're not able to run as expected, because you have to keep beds available. It creates a huge operational issue.
Okay, so what's the next opportunity here, Alan? Is the next opportunity administering the vaccine?
Yeah, I'm really hopeful that everything we're hearing about having a vaccine available this fall comes to fruition. Another thing that really needs to happen, one thing that's good, let me give some good news. As we've seen the cases come down nationally, we're seeing a quicker turnaround time on a lot of this testing, and that's key. You know, in small towns, if you're able to get tested and they're able to fairly rapidly let you know, a good thing in a small town, you really know where you've been, right, the last week, and you know who you talk with.
Yeah.
And so what we have seen is a lot of these small towns, you know, they have 6, 7, 10 people infected, but then they're able to identify and tap it down. Once we get the vaccine, and as long as we can keep these numbers to a manageable level where we can do tracing, I think these rural communities are going to make it through this fall okay, but there's a lot of time left on this.
Yeah, okay. I've only got about 30 seconds left here, Alan, but I got to ask, what's your overall level of concern for the rural health system as we get into the fall?
Unfortunately, I'm really concerned at this point. A lot of rural school systems are back in. You've got these facilities that are still operating at not full volume. It's going to take a federal intervention just to get us through the fall, and then hopefully, we'll be ready to go at the start of this new year.
Important. No doubt about it. It is important to us all. Alan, thank you again for the update. We really appreciate it. Good luck to you and keep those doors open, man.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate it.
All right. That is Alan Morgan. He is the CEO of the National Rural Health Association. That's it, Davis. We're wrapping it up. Happy Labor Day, everybody. Come back tomorrow. We'll have another round of AgriTalk ready to go.
Hello, America. Oh,